Here's Adley Simon busting it. He's in the midfield. 50, 45, 40. He could score. 25, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown! Adley Simon! That, my friends, is a 75-yard U of R Rams touchdown!
Growing the Game with Ballsy is a podcast dedicated to growing the game of football in Saskatchewan. Each week, Michael Ball will talk with Rider guests, but he'll also highlight amateur athletes, coaches, and builders in his province, growing the game we love. Now, here's Ballsy.
And this podcast isn't possible without some great supporters like Corey at Double Z Ag Sales in Weyburn, David Dubay and Pizza Huts in Saskatchewan, Mark Greshner Photography, Paul Waldo, the three-time Grey Cup champ over at Royal LePage in Regina, Nathan and Landon at Boys Next Door Window Cleaning based out of White City, Zelko Stefanovic at SAS Selects Football in Moose Jaw working out of the Yaris Center. Thanks to them and Paul and his family at Riviera Ag Seeds in Radville, Southern Saskatchewan's premium certified seed grower, delivering homegrown, certified durum, yellow peas, and chickpeas. Riviera Ag Seeds is the sponsor of our homegrown segment, which is coming up. But first, have you experienced advantages during quarantine? I believe this married couple has. Check it out.
And now today's episode of The Married Couple.
You know what I don't miss during this time of working from home?
What's that?
Stan's bad breath. You always had to have 6 feet social distancing with that guy.
Oh, yeah. And I got to miss going to your sister's birthday party last week. And I got to avoid an endless conversation with her dumb husband.
I know. He's like Fred Flintstone, but with Barney Rubble's brain.
Mm-hmm. Quarantine got us out of that.
Hey, I never thought of it like that. It forced us to be antisocial without being antisocial.
Yeah.
Huh.
Want some more wine?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Join us next time for The Married Couple.
Now, before we get to our homegrown feature, I wanted to unveil my U of S Huskies Mount Rushmore. I talked to a few people past and present with the team and mix in my own thoughts here. And these are the five names I came up with. Now, I know it's supposed to be four in a Mount Rushmore, but I squeezed in five because, well, I can, and because it was hard to pick who I'd put on this mountain. The first couple are no-brainers. First is Val Schneider. Served as the U of S's athletic director from 1980 to 1991 as head coach of the football team from 1973 to 83 with the exception of 79, and as an assistant dean of the College of Physical Education at the U of S as well. He was also an assistant coach for 9 years with the Huskies, including when they won the Vanier Cup in 1990. He is on the University of Saskatchewan Wall of Fame. He was put there in 2007 and is also a member of the Saskatoon Sports Hall of Fame. On the second mountain is Brian Towers. Became Saskatchewan's head coach in 1984 and became CIS football's winningest head coach in 2011, surpassing Larry Haler with his 170th overall win. Now, he stepped away from coaching on December 19th, 2016, with a U Sports football record of 196 wins and 315 games coached. He also holds the record for most appearances as a head coach in the Vanier Cup with 9, having won in 90, 96, and 1998. He also played college football with the Huskies and was inducted into the Canadian Football Hall of Fame in 2017 in the Builders category. On the third mountain here for the U of S Huskies is Dave Pickett, a graduate of Campion Collegiate in Regina. He joined the Huskies football team in 1970 after leading the Hilltops to back-to-back junior titles in 1968 and 69. He played on the Huskies basketball team, by the way, while a member of the Hilltops. Dave capped an outstanding three-year run with the Huskies in 1973 when he was selected an all-star quarterback and won the Heck Crichton Trophy as the most outstanding player in Canadian university football. Dave that year passed for 2,251 yards, a mark which stood for a decade as the Canadian record. The Huskies that year tied for first place in the conference. Dave was later an assistant coach with the football team. Now, On the last mountain, we have two faces. First, Warren Muzyka, the current DC for the Huskies football team. He played for the Huskies from 1994 to 1998 before spending five seasons in the CFL with the Hamilton Tiger Cats and Winnipeg Blue Bombers. He won the Grey Cup in 99 with the Tabbies, as that was a game that was played at BC Place. The Tiger Cats had lost in 98, and then Muzyka and the Tiger Cats won in 99 against the Calgary Stampeders in a rematch at BC Place. As a Husky, though, Muzyka was named an All-Canadian three times and a conference all-star four times. He led the Can West in tackles in both 1997 and 98. He was named the conference defensive player of the year in both of those seasons and won the national award in 1998. He also won the Bruce Coulter Award as the most outstanding defensive player in the 1996 Vanier Cup. Muzyka also played junior football with the Saskatoon Hilltops, winning the Canadian Bowl in 1991 and named the CJFL defensive player of the year in 1993. The other face on the Huskies, Mount Rushmore, belongs to my next guest in our homegrown segment for Riviere Ag Seeds in Radville. Okay, this guy here is on my U of S Mount Rushmore. It'd be number 10, Dan Farthing. Now, you are tied with Warren Muzyka, but Muzyka, he turned me down for an interview. He doesn't like doing interviews, so...
Is that right? Is that a fact?
Yeah, he's not... And I know you like to talk, so that's good.
Oh, yeah, that's me to a T.
Okay, Dan, so, yeah, your Husky career. Let's start with that rookie season. You had, like, over 1,700 yards receiving. Just talk about that year. What do you remember about that?
Oh, boy. I remember that ignorance is bliss, you know, really, because... I think I went there not really knowing what to expect, and I came into a team that had some pretty good receivers at the time, some guys I think that were at that time Canada West All-Stars. And so, you know, I was just and honestly, to tell you the truth, I wasn't even slated to start, but for a late hamstring injury to a more veteran player, I think they were going to try and ease me into everything because, you know, the university football situation back then was you know, there were tons of guys that had played, you know, 4 and 5 years a junior and then played U Sport football. So it was like, holy cow, there's some grown men here with families. And, you know, here I am a 17-year-old, you know, because my birthday was a late birthday. I turned 18 after that football season. And I was like, holy cow, there's like 24, 25-year-old dudes playing here. So I think they were trying to, you know, maybe thinking about easing me into it. Late hamstring injury to the guy that was ahead of me, and then I got on the field, and you know, I think opposing teams didn't really know anything about me, and they were really concerned about the other three guys, and so that sort of anonymity just got me some success, I think.
When you think about Husky football and your time there, what pops into your mind first, besides that rookie season that the ignorance is bliss, but what pops into your mind? Because you were a Vanier Cup champion. Anything pop into your mind specifically?
Oh, yeah. Like, I think it was a great, great journey because that first year we were a poor team, you know, and I think, you know, there was a small nucleus of us that really decided that, you know, we wanted a different fortune for ourselves, and we kind of sat around and kind of thought about what it would take, and we knew that it was going to be a change in culture, actually, because I think there were a lot of guys that were just, you know, showing up to get the jacket, so to speak, and it wasn't really a full year sort of thing then. And so that small nucleus of us, you know, got in the weight room a ton, ran track in the off season, did all that very, very, very diligently, and you know, this cultivated a new sort of expectation, a new standard of expectation, and you know what, Brian Towers was instrumental in cultivating that new culture, you know, and then he just kind of he fostered it, he treated those guys a little bit differently, and knew that was what he preferred, and you know, every year we saw a progression from, you know, doormat of the league to, you know, losing in overtime in the playoffs to the Canada West team that actually went in and won the Vanier Cup, where we were like, oh my God, that should be us right now, to, you know, my third year where we played in the Sky Dome the first year it opened against Western Ontario and came up short. And then the next year saw that whole journey come to fruition with a championship and a ring on our fingers. So And you know what? Honestly, it's a large testament to, or a reason, I guess, why I do what I do for a living right now. Because, you know, strength and conditioning was a huge, huge part of that journey for me. So obviously, it has a special place in my heart. And I know what it can do for you as an individual. And I know that if it can teach you that life lesson of, hey, man, if you want a different output, you need to consider some different inputs. And, you know, in terms of inputs and outputs, there's no greater example of that than when you exercise, when you train. You know, you just change yourself. You change the athleticism you bring to the table. And that was the end result. It's pretty fulfilling to get rewarded for that, let alone the life lesson that it taught me that I still carry with me today.
We'll get to Towers in a second, but do you got to lose before you can win? Like, to, you know, I guess where I'm going with this, do you really appreciate that victory, being that you guys were so close 2 years, you know, the 2 years previous?
For sure. Absolutely. And you know what? I remember this like it was yesterday. A great Regina Ram friend of mine, who is actually, you know, coaching another Terry Eisler, who had played his time with the Rams and came up. And he was a huge part of our team, a really great, great part of our journey, our change, our success. And I remember him in the locker room when he was done. And that was the year we lost to Western. Mm-hmm. And, you know, win or lose, he would give the chant, you know, in the locker room, give me an H, give me an S, you know. And it was just, and to see him do that after our loss, where he couldn't help us cross that final hurdle, man, it still brings tears to my eyes.
Yeah, I know. I can tell in your voice. Did you immediately think of that guy when you hoisted the trophy the next year?
All the guys that came before, like guys like Terry Eisler and guys like Ed Carlton and guys that just were part of the process and really, really helped, create that culture. You know, really, really helped us bring the guys along and helped us weed out the guys that weren't a part of it. So you know, but they were all, I know they were watching, and some of them were coaching it the next year. And you know, I know they had this sense of pride, that comes with being a part of it and knowing that they contributed.
Do you remember a play or a game from your Husky career that still sticks out in your mind? Every once in a while with my Ram junior days, I remember a play. Maybe I don't remember it exactly how it is. I trump it up in my mind more. But you probably have some video evidence of some of your plays. Do you remember a specific play or a game that you still go back to?
Oh, man. You know, I don't know. There's quite a few instances. I guess, you know, I guess there's one, because it was on, you know, national TV and on TSN and everything. There was a couple plays throughout that year where TSN was kind of following us, because I think they understood that we might have a chance. And in that Vanier Cup game, and a loss was just a little slot back counter run it was just more sloppy tackling than anything, to tell you the truth. But I'm pretty sure, and I'm not without exaggeration, I think nine out of the guys on the defensive side of the ball had a chance to tackle me, and they missed.
I remember that one.
And
yeah.
I got it, and I got into the end zone. And again, I know it's as a result of some sloppy tackling, but it sure looked nice.
And as a receiver, that's all that matters. It looked
that's
nice.
Right.
That's right. Right. Were you a trash talker when you played?
Oh God, no.
No, you just did your thing.
No, not at all. No, yeah. That has never ever been a part of who I am.
Yeah.
You know. Even, you know, obviously with the Rough Riders too, I kind of let other people handle that that element of the game. And, I just kept to myself. And, you know, the only thing that I ever did that was sort of like sort of an attitude sort of thing that I always really, really tried. I know Tom Europe used to tell me he hated this, and Greg Knox used to tell me this too. Like, I used to, when they hit me, and they would hit me hard, like I would take some shots going across the middle. But I always tried to make a point, if I could, if I was conscious, get up and help them up first, right? Help them up first, because, you know, your DBs are always waiting for the chance to crush a receiver, stand over top of them with them between their legs, and, you know, hear from their. And if you get up before them and help them up, you steal that thunder so much, and they just hate it.
Yeah,
but,
that's
so
good.
All I'd have to do is make it back to the huddle for one more play, and then I could go on my knee.
do you think people underestimated you a bit because, I don't want to say timidness, but because you weren't fiery like that per se, do you think people maybe underestimated Dan Farthing, especially early on?
Maybe. I don't know. I'm not sure. You know, like, I think at the end of the day, you always have to kind of the bottom line is your play, right?
Yeah.
The bottom line is your play, and no matter how much you talk, it's got to be backed up by what you do on the field. And
yeah.
I had a fairly humble career, so I feel like I should have been a fairly humble guy.
Wow. I mean, I think your career was outstanding at the U of S, and obviously a Plaza of Honor guy with the Riders, but should have been a lot more. We've already talked about that. You went through more quarterbacks than I think that was possible. It was unbelievable. Dan, talk about the pressure of being a Saskatchewan kid, Saskatoon guy at the U of S, and then being a Saskatchewan Rough Rider. Did you feel the pressure? And being a high draft pick, too.
Yeah. Well, no, you know what? Not at the U of S. At the U of S, it was just fun. You know, like we had a great, great group of guys, and, you know, it's always fun. And you've experienced this, too, and anybody that's gone into university football kind of has, too. Like the guys that you hate throughout your high school career that are your sworn enemies all of a sudden become your best friends, right?
Right.
And that ends up being pretty cool because, you know, it's like a whole high school all-star team, and if you can keep yourself together for 4 or 5 years, it ends up being a pretty close brotherhood, you know, and I'm convinced you need that brotherhood to win a championship for sure. So I didn't think that was much pressure at all. It was super fun.
With
the Rough Riders, though, I'm sorry?
Yeah, with the Rough Riders?
Yeah, with the Rough Riders, I thought, you know, yeah, I guess it was. You know, there was a lot of expectation, and I think a lot of people kind of knew what I was capable of, but I think they really underestimate the jump between Canada West football or University Sports football and pro, and then they also underestimate, like, the time you need to get up to speed to be someone like a Jeff Fairholm or a Ray Elgard or, you know, any of the other guys that were ahead of me. Like, I was going to a place where, you know, people are expecting you're picked second overall in the draft and they want you to make an immediate impact, and you come to a team with two Hall of Famers. You know, what do they expect out of you in that situation, you know? Like,
mm-hmm.
So
yeah, that's
so
true.
I felt like yeah, it's hard. It was hard. That first year was super hard. Like I had an ego challenge like you would not believe. You and I have talked about the level of competition that you face too, and how that makes you grow. Well, I think I grew more in the first 2 weeks of Rough Rider training camp that year than I grew in my last 2 years as a Husky.
Well,
because
I think that's where when we talk American and Canadian university football, I think that's mm-hmm. where the difference comes in. It's getting a little better in Canada, I think, and maybe you could
sure.
speak that because
sure.
you train these athletes. But I think in the States, you know, if you're not pulling your weight, there's three guys waiting for your job behind. At the U of S, if you're not doing your job, there might be one guy, but there's probably not two or three guys, and you're probably
yeah.
pretty safe. And conversely, Dan, when you're lining up against a corner on that side, once you get past the first corner or two or the first halfback or two, it's probably not as much of a competition. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know. The daily training environment, right? Well, I'm not usually running routes for 4 years against our starting halfback,
yeah.
usually running routes against the scout team guy, which is, you know, a guy's first or second year out of high school. And is he challenging me to be the best I can be? I'd like to think that I applied myself, but at the end of the day, like when you don't have to, like, it's like when everything you do is working, like what makes you dig deeper?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
So you plateau. You know, so you plateau, and I got a rude awakening when I had to run routes against guys from, you know, the SEC and Big Ten, and back when it was Big Ten back then, Pac-10 back then. It was like, holy cow, I'm giving everybody my best stuff, and he's sitting here in my hip pocket. What's up?
Yeah.
You know, like it was tough. And then, you know, the whole province is kind of waiting for you to do something, and you're like on the reserve list or waiting on the sidelines, you know, sitting on a bench kind of waiting for your opportunity, and you're like, oh God, I let a whole bunch of people down. You know, it was tough for sure. But
looking
back on it now,
yeah.
I needed that time. I really did.
Yeah, and I don't know that people get afforded that time now like they used to in the league when they're coming up, especially for Canadians in skilled positions. You and I, it's mostly me. We had a spirited conversation in the Safeway produce aisle there
because
I was starting. You said hi, and then we went. I went off. You just stood there and took it in. Sorry, I apologize for venting, but you know. I feel like when teams look at their roster, they say, okay, we need seven Canadians, so we're going to go with a center and two interior guards, maybe a tackle, so we'll have three guys there. We might have a Canadian nose tackle. We'll try to find a linebacker and maybe the safety. And if we have to, we'll throw Farthing out there on the – or Picton, we'll use him now. We'll use Picton as the wide side wide receiver, and he might get three balls a year. You know what I mean? Whereas you look at Rob Bagg. Rob Bagg came inside that 1 year when Roosevelt got hurt and had his greatest – like he had almost 1,000 yards receiving as a slot back on that crappy season with the Riders. I just feel we've moved away from the Sinopolis, the Farthings, and those kind of guys in the league. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, like, I think there's sort of a movement with receivers, though, that a receiver has to look and feel or look a certain way and have a certain, sort of skill set and sort of physical, a set of physical attributes to actually be effective. And, you know, I think, honestly, I think in that judgment, I think Weston Dressler was a little bit of a casualty, too, right? So, but I think, you know, so I think a lot of people just sort of measure the catch radius, they call it, right?
Right.
The catch radius of a big, tall, lanky guy who can jump out of the gym. And, you know, and honestly, does a quarterback have to be less accurate with that guy? You know what? He does, because the guy's got a range that can bring it on in. So if you don't fit that mold, you know, like, you're kind of expendable, you know? So I think that might be part of it. And I think you're right. I think I heard your podcast with Shivs, with Roy Shivers, and he was talking a little bit about guys having a maple leaf on their chest, and he had to figure out how those guys had to have a special place on the roster and stuff. It was like, oh boy, so how do we hide these guys who are less talented? That's the attitude you sometimes get. And I know when you're talking about interior line and you know, I know those are super important positions. I'm not trying to undermine them or downplay them.
Yeah, but
them
come
all,
on, Dad. Like, Dan, who wants to – no offense to Gene Mikowski, who's an honorable mention on this Husky Mount Rushmore, okay? And one
honorable
of the great –
how did that happen?
Well,
holy cow.
Well, but I mean, there's you, there's Musica, there's Pickett, who won a heck Crichton as a quarterback. There's Val Schneider, and there's Brian Tower. So, I mean, they've had quite a few guys roll through there. Where I'm going with this is, who wants to grow up and be Gene Mikowski? You know what I mean? Nobody aspires to be an offensive lineman, I don't think. They don't. You're usually put there in minor football. They put the biggest guy there, and it's hilarious. Nobody wants to be an offensive lineman, right? But those are the guys that generally play pro football for 17 or 18 years.
Yeah, and have stellar careers for sure, yeah.
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 And there's more than a few of the great ones that have come from Saskatchewan too. So
do you think that's going to kill the game though? Do you think that's going to kill, like, not everybody's going to make pro, trust me, there, Dan Farthing comes along and not everybody's going to be Dan Farthing. So I don't expect everybody to be Dan Farthing, but is it going to have a detriment on our game, and not only on our game at the grassroots level, but attendance? I mean, kids look to, you know, even when I talk to these high school kids, like, who's your favorite linebacker? Luke Kuechly. Nobody says Cameron Judge. Like, they don't say, who's your favorite receiver? People don't say, like, who's your model, role model for a receiver? Well, people don't say, well, growing up, it was Brad Sinopoli. They'll say it was Wes Welker, or it was Julian Edelman, or it was, Dez Bryant or something. They're watching the NFL. We got to get more eyes on our game, and I think the way to do that is Canadians.
I couldn't agree with you more. You know, I just hear comments all the time about CFL 2.0 and about maybe changing the ratio to have more Canadians so that the product on the field is better and that's somehow more attractive. Well, you know what? At the end of the day, it's never, ever, ever going to be the NFL, you know? And if you're always going to try and compare yourself to the NFL and try and just be that and try and parallel that level of play and let that be the thing that attracts the fans, I don't think it's going to do it. I really don't.
No, I don't either.
No, I really don't, because I just don't. I think all across the world right now, you can be anywhere in the world with a cell phone and you can watch an NFL game. So why would you watch the CFL if you could watch the NFL? So if we realign and just kind of change our sights and say, okay, we want this to be a Canadian game and we want this to help our Canadian grassroots game, then we should include more Canadians. And I think that when you include more Canadians in the whole thing, and give those guys, like you said, the chance to develop a little bit for maybe 6 months, maybe a year, maybe even 2 years, where they can kind of elevate their play because they're facing that daily training environment that makes them get the best of themselves. Maybe you'll get a higher level of football from Canadian talent, and then maybe make it a truly Canadian game, you know? And then maybe when you go to the government for a little bit of help, they'll be a little bit more receptive to you when you need a little bit of help because you are Canadian.
Yeah, no, it makes a very good point. Hey, Dan, talk about Brian Towers, because I said he's on my Mount Rushmore. How could he not be? He's the all-time winningest coach with university victories. Just your thoughts on Brian Towers.
Well, he should be there, absolutely. So good choice. You know, Brian, I thought was it. Like, I touched on some of his impact before. You know, like he really helped us. You know, because I don't think it can come exclusively from the coach. It was really a collaborative effort. But, boy, did he do everything in his power to cultivate the new culture that we were trying to create. Everything in his power. You know, everything from just making, you know, renovations to the weight room possible, to getting us new uniforms so we looked and felt a little bit different, to everything. And I tell you, you know, this is something that sticks with me from Brian Towers, because I took a coaching theory class from him in university as well.
Wow.
In the College of Kinesiology. Something that he said that sticks with me to this day in running my own business and everything. He said, equality and equity are two very, very different things. If you treat people equally, that is unfair. You need to treat people with equity, which means they get what they deserve. And there are some people in the room that kind of challenged him and like, well, like, who makes those judgments? He goes, me, with input, as a coach, as a head coach, I am asked to evaluate and decide what the best direction for my team is. And that means that I have to make judgments. And if I don't make those judgments based on like objective data, subjective feelings, if I don't make those judgments, judgment calls on people, then I am shirking my responsibility as a coach. And so he said, you give people what they give. It's just like you give people what they give to your program. If those guys that are like deciding to change the culture of this team and are having a huge positive impact on it, if they screw up with something, you know, being caught late at curfew or, you know, whatever, maybe messing wake up call and missing the bus in the morning, whatever. But if they make any sort of stupid university student mistake, are those guys going to get punished differently than guys that are, you know, cancers? And he said, they are. They're absolutely going to get treated differently. So that's kind of something that he cultivated, and it's like, whew. And you know what? When you're running a business and you're relying on your human resource talent and how they treat your organization, you know, and how they're treating it like their own, boy, you know, I think about that statement that day often.
That's a very deep statement, and that is true. That's a good way to look at it. Good building block. Hey, speaking of equality, the big topic, of course, is race with what happened, despicable thing that happened in Minnesota. I had asked Roy, you had referenced the podcast with the Shiv, and I'd asked him if we can look inside the locker room to help us in society. He didn't think so, because guys like Drew Brees are still talking the way they do. How do you feel? Because you've been, like, you talked about it. You're Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Can West guy going against guys from the SEC and Pac-12. And that's the beauty of football. Everybody comes together from a different culture, and you all are one color. In this case, it's green and white, the Rider green and white. You put on the same jersey, you go through the same shit, you know, you get yelled at the same, you have to go through the same workouts, the same criticisms, everything like that. So just talk about the locker room dynamic.
Well, okay, first of all, let me just say that when you are, you know, I do think that there is obviously racism in Canada. I'm not going to say that there's not. If there's 1% of the population that is racist, that's 1% too much.
Right.
But I think that the situation is different in the States for sure. And honestly, to tell you the truth, like I would have to tend to agree with Roy. There are some situations that go on in the locker room where, you know, as a Canadian kid, you come in and your jaw drops. Like, you don't get it. And I think, you know, him growing up in California, Shivers, so what he said, and his jaw dropped a few times too. So, you know, like if he grew up in the States and that still shocked him down there with some of the interactions he had in St. Louis or when he had to go down to the deep South and stuff.
Yeah.
Man, you can imagine a prairie boy. You know, you're like, wait a minute here. We're not all the best of friends. Wait a minute here. We don't hang out every single night all together. Like, what's going on here? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it is, I'm sorry. I don't know. Like when there's always clicks, right? There's always clicks on any given team. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, you were like, man, is this really real? Like, are these clicks kind of, you know, based upon race and where you're from? And it is a strange thing. And, you know, for me to say that, you know, some of those lines didn't exist, you know, I'd be lying. I really would be lying. So,
well, I listened to your comments here, and this is what I'm picking up. Maybe I'm not picking it up right. Dan Farthing walks into a locker room, and he doesn't, like me, he's white. He doesn't know what it is to be black. He doesn't know what they have faced with cops and everything they've faced down south or whatever it is, right? And so when white Dan Farthing comes up to, I don't know, black Shante Peoples and wants to talk to him, I'm just using Shante as an example, and he's kind of guarded or standoffish or they're not really warm, you're kind of like, well, we're teammates, like what's going on? And it's just something that they come from a different background than you, and sometimes it's just, you know, it's just that's the way it is.
I would say you kind of hit the nail on the head. I wish you would have used a different example than Shante Peoples, because there's a lot nicer guys that I came across with that just kind of just double took if you kind of were you kind of just like reached out, you know, or just tried to be a teammate or something.
I threw Shante in there because off the top of my head, I was trying to think of all the guys you play with. I've watched football for so long. So Shante Peoples as a person, regardless of anything else, he wasn't one of my favorites. Him and I banged heads a few times. Okay. And has nothing to do with race or anything. It just, I just didn't like him. But anyway, that has nothing to do with anything. So pick a guy. Was there a guy in the locker room where you didn't have any problems with, and he didn't have any problems with you, but it was like, okay, and then maybe you worked it, like, not worked it out, but you kind of warmed up to each other, I guess is the best way to put it.
Was, you know what, I had a great relationship with so many guys that I would call, you know, like friends when we played together. Like a lot of us don't keep in touch still. Like a lot of us are moving on with our lives, and you know, like, and that goes across colors. Like we
you
just move on. Right.
Yeah.
But I would like to say, and I like to believe that I would be thought of as that guy that just kind of didn't rub anybody the wrong way. Mm-hmm. And you know what? There's a lot of people there are tons and tons and tons of guys that didn't rub me the wrong way at all. And we were just, you know, super cordial and, you know, joked and laughed and stuff like that. But when it came time to just hang out at night, you know, it just didn't happen. And I'm embarrassed to say it. Like, I really am. Like, it's just, and you know what? It's weird. It was weird. It was just, there's lots of things that were kind of weird that you kind of look back on now, where even roommate arrangements and things like that were just kind of, this is kind of strange, you know? Like, and yeah, you're right. You're prairie boy. And you're like going, because, you know, there were just a tiny, tiny handful of fellas that I played with at the U of S. And cross paths with, you know, from, you know, some of the guys like, Dan Fleming and Chris Lewis and things like that down here in Regina.
Yeah.
But then up in Saskatoon, Mervyn Bryce was a Regina guy. He came up to Saskatoon. You know, you didn't think anything of that. You don't think anything of it. These guys are great guys. You just kind of everybody hung out. And,
yeah.
Yeah. But it was, you know, it was weird. It was weird because I think that a large portion of your team comes from a place where this is a huge issue, you know, and I'm going to say it's an issue here in Canada. Obviously I'm not going to say that because, you know, it's a reality, but it's a huge issue, south of the 49th and a huger issue south of the 49th.
Yeah.
So, and that's where a lot of people play great football, and that's where a lot of people get picked from, right? Like, if you talk about where the vast majority of people come from, it's like good players in the CFL would come from the South and from Texas and from Southern California, and there's issues.
Yeah.
There's issues. So, like, you know, to be guarded, for them to be guarded when a white dude approaches them and kind of is acting friendly, even though he might be sincere, you know, you're going to have to forgive them for being guarded.
Yeah, and to be honest, when I heard you heard Roy's interview and when I heard him answer my question, I thought it was refreshing to hear him say, even though a lot of people wouldn't like it, it's refreshing to hear him say, I was going to hire a black guy anyway all along. I was going to hire Danny Barrett. I didn't care if I interviewed Lancaster or Rick Campbell or whoever. I was going to hire Pow Pow or Danny Barrett because I'm bringing somebody through the door with me. And you know, people might say, well, that's not right. But you know what? At the end of the day, I at least respect him for being honest about that. And I could see how he'd look at it that way.
Oh, absolutely. Without a doubt. And you know what? There's lots of different perspectives to look at this, and one perspective might be, you know, when you're looking back on this whole situation, like not just in recent years, but 400 or 500 years, if you're talking about exploiting a people and taking advantage of them for your own benefit, well, to make the playing field even at the end of the day, maybe you have to give advantage to them now.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. So that's like... that's one of the perspectives. It's like, you know, it can't equal at this point is not going to even the table because no. There's been so many years of suppression and oppression. And that's so just saying we're all equal.
Yeah.
That's not good enough. You know, that's really not good enough.
No, it's not. So, Dan, last question for you, my friend. Yeah. It's been a great talk. Give a piece of advice for that young aspiring athlete that is a football player and he wants to be the next Dan Farthing or Chris Getzlaff or those kind of guys. A young athletic football player, not to say offensive lineman, defensive lineman are athletic, but give him a piece of advice, not only on the field, but just his mentality and working out and that type of stuff.
Okay, I would say two things here. Like, first of all, I touched on already, you know, inputs determine outputs. They really do. And so, like, if you expect to be a high performer, someone who stands out, then you have to do over and above things. You really do. If you want to be over and above, do over and above. And for me, that lesson was taught to me in strength and conditioning. And I carry it through to all aspects of my life, whatever it may be, you know. So mm-hmm. I think that's a great, great, great life lesson to learn. And, you know, it's great to teach yourself that lesson in the weight room and carry it everywhere. You know, and the other one is this kind of a silly thing. And we've also talked about this, but we're all guilty of this where, you know, you're doing one-on-ones and you're kind of looking at yourself in the line and you're counting that you're three back. And you're going to go three back on the defensive back line, and you're going to go, okay, is this guy a guy I'm going to beat, or is this guy a guy that's going to give me a challenge? You know what? If you're not lined up against a guy that's going to make you be your best, put yourself there.
Mm.
I would say put yourself there because that's what's going to make you make every step that you want to take, because otherwise you're going to plateau and you're going to come up short. But if you seek out opportunities for unbelievable competition, you will get better. And that's our shortfall in Canada. Those opportunities are just not there. In the States, you're 10 times more likely to come across that guy that's going to make you be your best because their population is 10 times as great as us. So yeah. if you have an opportunity, seek out somebody who's going to beat you 50% of the time.
Outstanding, Dan. Thanks for this. I appreciate it, buddy.
My pleasure. My pleasure, Baldy.
Now, I know Husky Nation listening to this will kind of have a raised eyebrow maybe at some of the people that I picked. Of course, I was not a U of S Husky grad. I have nothing to do with the team other than broadcast their games when the Rams play against them, but I've always admired the kind of program they run there in Saskatoon and the fan support they get. Like I said, I talked to people past and present with the organization and also came up with my own thoughts. Here are some honorable mentions that didn't make our Mount Rushmore. Of course, Big Gene Mikowski, one of the greatest Saskatchewan Rough Riders of all time. How about Brent Schneider? What an outstanding quarterback he was in his day for that football team. John Konachowski, another way back name. Marshall Toner, great slot back at both the university and CFL level. And we can't forget about Grand Coulee's own Ben Heenan, Regina boy Sheldon Williams grad. Ben Heenan, great Saskatchewan Rough Rider and Indianapolis Colt, a part of that University of Saskatchewan Huskies history. So many great names, but we had to narrow it down to five names. I hope you enjoy, and I hope you share this podcast with others in your football circle.
This has been Growing the Game with Balzi.
If you have a football story you'd like to share to help us grow the game, email Michael Ball at mball@harvardbroadcasting.com. Ballsy can be heard weekdays in Regina on 104.9 The Wolf Morning Show and during Saskatchewan Roughriders and U of R Rams broadcasts on 620 CKRM.